Yes, and Raising Sand is just coming up. We're going to do a live phone interview with Susan Gallimore on her book tour. Do want to let you know the views or opinions expressed by the host DJ and their guests present on KZSU 90.1 FM Stanford do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Leland Stanford Junior University or its associates. We thank you for tuning in to this KZSU broadcast. Christo Redentor by Donald Byrd. And right now, host of the Raising Sand radio show here at KZSU and really all over the country because it's heard on a website called called Radio for All, Susan Gallimore out on the road somewhere in America. Susan, are you there?
I am, yeah.
All right. What's going on, man?
Well, I'm in just got into Boston like this very second, and on the way back to San Francisco after about 12 days on the road with the book.
You know, I knew we were going to talk on the phone, so I've been thinking about that. And the way we met was you were researching for your book, and I had you on the show, and you told the story of going to find your son in Iraq. You physically went over there and found him in the military just so you could talk to him. And it was a very compelling story. And then we started this little radio show, Raising Sand, and you've had amazing guests on that show for the last 2 years and been doing great work. But all that time, you were working on your book at the same time, and you kept giving me updates about it, and I kept saying, yeah, I'm hardly wait till it comes out. And it is out now. What's the name of the book?
The book is called Long Time Passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror, and it's put out by Pluto Press and distributed by Palgrave Macmillan in the United States, and it came out on April 27th. So
just in time for Mother's Day.
Just in time for Mother's Day, yeah.
And you're a mother yourself. Did you have a nice Mother's Day?
What I did for Mother's Day was actually very interesting. I was in a little town in Massachusetts, about 2.5 hours from Boston, and I was doing both a book tour event, and we were painting a mural on a large canvas. About 20, 25 women participated, and we each painted something on the mural that we felt represented who we were and who each of us was, and that's how we spent Mother's Day. So it was this mural actually will be going to a huge collection that's happening and will be part of a 5,000 mural collection in Egypt in 2010. So it was quite a good way to spend Mother's Day.
That's great.
Yeah.
Was that wasn't part of your book tour?
Well, it was. My book tour event was at the, it's called the Northampton Center for the Arts. And the woman that was coordinating that mural painting, her name is Claudia Lipko, and she's part of, she is the founder of Iraqi Children's Art Exchange, in which she organizes a painting of murals between American children and Iraqi children in Amman, Jordan. And so she's been going back and forth doing that. And then this piece, of course, is specifically for Mother's Day.
Susan Gallimore, can you speak about the genesis of your book? How did that come about?
Well, my son went into the military in 1999. He was in college, and this was not something that I expected or really wanted for my child. I thought he was going to finish college. He'd already done 3 years of Chinese language and culture studies, and ran into a recruiter who persuaded him that, you know, one way to finish school was to get money for college from the United States Army and so on. And he and I went back and forth for about a year before he actually went into the military. He went into the military, believe it or not, on the 4th of July, 1999, and I dropped him off at the recruiter station with my heart in my throat, but, you know, I had done my best to persuade him that this probably wasn't something he wanted to do, and then I'd finally given up and thought, well, Okay, it's an old volunteer army, an old volunteer military. You can go in, you can check it out, discover that he doesn't really want to be in this, and he can leave, because that's what you do in a volunteer military, to my way of thinking. And I realized after a very short while that wasn't an option. Leaving is not an option. Once you are a volunteer, quote-unquote, in the United States military, you're there for your term. In this case, it was 4 years. So he was deployed to Afghanistan in 2003. It was supposed to be a six-month tour of duty, and it ended up being a nine-month tour of duty. Even back then, they were extending the troops, so he was extended for 3 months. And he came back in September of 2003, and in January of 2004, deployed to Iraq. And at that point, I had had about enough of the what I saw as the propaganda around the war. At the time, it was very difficult to speak out against the war in Afghanistan because people were so sure that this was a patriotic act, and this was an act of self-defense, and that Afghans, for some reason, were going to be pounded because a bunch of other people, notably Saudis, for example, had been part of the 9/11 attack. So Afghanistan became the target, and as I say, it was very difficult to raise even a conversation about why Afghanistan. So when he went to Iraq, I decided that it was time for me to go and talk to him about the kinds of things that could happen in war. So I found my way with a women's delegation to Amman, and then convoyed across from Amman to Baghdad. And eventually, after about a week, found my son. But that week was full of stories of absolute horror, particularly for a mother who had a kid in uniform. That essentially is the quick version in summary. I can go into more detail if you're interested.
Well, so your experience in that week of going to find your son is what kind of snapped something in you and said, I got to tell this story.
Well, I had, my original idea was to go, first of all, and talk to my son, and also to talk to Iraqis, to find out from Iraqis what was going on with him, because I knew that we were not getting the real story in the United States here, and, you know, the, as we call it, the mainstream media wasn't really giving us the story, and they were giving us a story that they wanted us to believe. And I knew from having a family in the Second World War and the Anglo-Boer War and South African Defense Force and so on, that war was not quite the glorious thing that was being painted here in the United States. So I wanted to be very sure that my son understood that things happen in war that can really haunt you for the rest of your life, and you're going to be stuck with that. It's not going to be the United States military. It's going to be you, the individual. When you do things in war that are only perpetrated usually during really intense battles and struggles and fear and so forth, those kinds of things that happen are the kinds of things that stick with you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea became, you wanted to go talk to mothers affected by war. You started a little website. You had a card called Motherspeak, right?
Right, motherspeak.org. I still have that organization. The first day that I was in Baghdad, I talked to a woman who had had three of her children. She had four children. She was pregnant with the fifth. And she and the family, her husband and the four kids, were driving home from a family visit with her parents. And there'd been a little ruckus in some part of the neighborhood, and the two Humvees came down the street, American Army, and they started shooting, and her husband put his hand out and he said, don't shoot, you know us, we share cigarettes and water on the corner, don't shoot, it's just my family in this car. And again, this moment of complete terror for these young folks on the Humvees, maybe couldn't hear this fella anyway, but he was in a civilian vehicle. And they continued shooting and ended up killing three of the children and the husband and wounding the woman, Anwar, who was pregnant, as I said, and the little 10-year-old girl was also wounded. And when I met Anwar, the baby that she had been pregnant with was had been born. He was 6 months old, and Abir, the daughter, was with her mother. And Anwar said to me, you know, tell Americans there is tragedy in Iraq. And that became my goal, you know, to tell Americans that there was tragedy in Iraq. But I also realized that there was a much bigger picture here, that there's tragedy in Afghanistan, that there's tragedy in Israel and the West Bank and Gaza. And we've just seen another round of that tragedy in Gaza. And then shortly after that, there was the 2006 war in Lebanon. And, of course, there was tragedy there, too. So I went there in early 2007, and I also interviewed women in Lebanon, Beirut, South Lebanon, and on the Israeli border in the east. So there's tragedy, and war itself is not the glorious thing that we see, and it's been my goal to talk to Americans about that.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes it's difficult, because you have to really shift a whole set of opinions and worldviews that people have. So it's not easy work. It's often grim, but you know, there's also a sense of joy in being able to fulfill what Anwar requested, which was tell Americans there's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say you mentioned it. It can be grim. Telling it, seeing it, hearing it, and transferring it, telling it. Has it changed you, or how has it affected you doing this work?
That's a good question, because when my son first went into the military, I became a counselor on the GI Rights hotline, and that's, if anyone's interested, GIRights.org. And what we do is we help the troops that are, you know, need information. Our job is to understand the Uniform Code of Military Justice and to get them answers that they're not necessarily getting from the military. In some cases, the troops have gone AWOL. In some cases, they have unexcused absences and so forth. And so our job is to give them information. You know, this is the situation that you're in. This is what may happen. These are the things that have happened in the past. We're not telling you what to do, but we're just giving you some indication of what may happen to you. And so what I learned on the GRI's hotline was just really how the military functions. And there's an enormous amount of coercion in the military. There's an incredibly high degree of intense training and desensitization. And, you know, it became very depressing to understand that. But the more I did the work and the more I talked with other troops, the more I realized that people are extremely resilient. And if the troops themselves could come back and begin to work for peace, then I could do it. And I needed to do it with much more of a joyous heart, understanding that, you know, life is both horror and beauty, and it's not one or the other. And so that became the change that I was able to, you know, incorporate into the way I did my work after that.
That was another question, too. In doing this work now, being in the thick of it, because I was at your first book event, and you were right. It was grim because you had mothers there who had been affected by war. As a matter of fact, a couple of American GI mothers who'd lost their sons.
Right. Mary Tillman was there, who we know lost her son through friendly fire.
Yeah.
Pat Tillman, the football star.
Right. Right here in Santa Clara. That's where he was from.
Yeah, and the story that she was given was that he was a hero charging up a hill against the enemy, and he was going to fight, you know, and save his unit and so forth, and it was all lies.
Yeah.
And it took her, I mean, Mary Tillman I have enormous respect for, because she really had the worst news that a mother can ever get.
Yeah.
And she felt suspicious about it from the beginning, and she put her head down and she studied and found out what had happened, and she was not going to let this go by without raising awareness.
And one of the real bad parts about that story was the Bush administration really used his death, and I believe it was Super Bowl. It happened right before the Super Bowl, and I think they really pumped that thing up over the Super Bowl while the lie was still going on.
Right.
And made him out to be this great hero, which he was a hero, definitely, but he was killed by his own guys.
Right, and it was really, you know, fratricide happens. I'm standing here in the airport, and there's a blurb going on now about a fratricide in Camp Liberty. And fratricide happens. This is war. You know, we need to recognize that a lot of people, including, by the way, in the Israeli Defense Force, we saw some of the deaths in Gaza, fratricides, too. But this happens in war. But it's the covering up from the very highest level that is the betrayal of the American people and the betrayal of that family, the Tillman family.
in doing this work and having to go through all that that, you know, that deep, dark, grim stuff to tell the truth, how do you find joy in your life now?
Well, one of the book events, I mean, look, what I did for this book event was my book is about the stories of other people, predominantly mothers, but not only. I also have men and young people and Iraqi refugees. I went to Syria to interview them, and a number of men in that, and other men, one of the Afghan stories, one of the people that I interviewed is a man. So it's not just mothers, but it's predominantly mothers. And what I did there was I gave the stories as they were told to me. This was not Susan's version of what she was told. These are the actual verbatim stories, because I believe there's a whole cultural aspect to storytelling, which is that it's not my job to co-opt or own someone else's story. It's their job to see themselves in the story that they've shared so generously and in so many cases so hospitably with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my job to give that story. And so I've done that. And one of the things that I wanted to be really clear to do in my book tour was to invite people from the community. This was not just Susan and her book, Long Time Passing Mothers Speak About War and Terror. This is Susan and the stories shared in that book and the stories of people affected by war from those communities. So, for example, in Portland, we had a Dr. Bouti, who was a psychiatrist, had to flee because of assassination attempts.
Oh, you played that show last week.
That's right. I played that last week, yeah. And so another, we've had military moms, we've had Vietnam vets, we've had active duty troops. And the thing that I come up with is, again, the resilience of people. The GIs are doing many of the GIs are doing such a lovely job, very, very creatively, trying to heal from war. I went to the Coffee Strong, which is a GI right-supported coffee shop, right in the gates of Fort Lewis, right outside the gates of Fort Lewis in Lakewood, which is near Tacoma in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
We had Jeremy Scahill as the MC in New York, where we had a military mom, Rita Doherty, join us. We also had an Israeli refuser. His name is Edik Elhanan. His mother's story is shared in my book. He shared with us that he became a combatant, it's called Combatants for Peace, and the Israelis in this group worked very closely with the Palestinians because they really understand the aspect of war that they've dealt with. And so they're very eloquent and they're very generous with one another. And, you know, he spoke about his evolution, really, from being a very highly regarded combat troop in an elite force in the Israeli Defense Force to the death of his sister on a street in a suicide bombing and the continued work that his family has done to make the situation in Israel better for everybody concerned, the Israelis as well as the Palestinians,
mm-hmm.
particularly the Palestinians. And so that's been a real joy. You know, this is not about being grim. This is about being responsible. This is about being fully mature about what it takes to be in a war and to be participants in a war and to be, you know, the people that benefit from war here in the United States. One of the troops, two quotes that have really stayed with me. One of the troops said, it's very hard for Americans to understand that they have the highest standard of living in the world because of what happens in these wars. He said, they don't really want to understand the privilege that they have comes at the cost of the lives of other families in, outside of the country, just like you don't want to know what happens in the back room of a butcher shop.
Right.
So I thought that was very eloquent. The other thing I heard today was one of the troops, some civilians said to one of the troops, thank you for your heroics and your heroism. You're a real hero in my eyes. And he said, no, we're not your heroes. He said, the ones that come back in flag-draped coffins are your heroes. He said, we, in fact, are your burden.
Wow.
And I think that is something that we really need to think about as we see the suicide rates going up amongst active duty and veteran troops, the suicide rates going up among recruiters, military recruiters.
Really?
The troops will become our burden, and the sooner we realize that we cannot afford this kind of psychic burden in the country, the better off we'll be.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Susan Gallimore, the host of this particular show, Raising Sand. I'm kind of subbing on the board for her today, and got her on the phone from, where are you, Logan Airport?
Logan Airport.
And you getting ready to fly back here to the Bay Area?
I'll be back in the Bay Area 10 or so.
You've been on a book tour. You went to Portland, and you went to New York and to Massachusetts?
Yeah, I went to Portland, then Seattle, Tacoma, and as I mentioned, Lakewood, Coffee Strong. It was very, and then Los Angeles. The West Coast leg of the tour was really very gratifying. A lot of people joined in and came to the events. From Los Angeles, I went to Washington, D.C., then all on the same day, actually, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and then back to New York, to New York at midnight. I had an event in New York the following day. And from New York, went to Boston, and then again Northampton. But the Philadelphia event, again, was excellent. The Los Angeles event, let me talk about this event for a moment. The sponsor in Los Angeles was American Friends Service Committee,
mm-hmm.
and they arranged for some speakers, and I arranged for some speakers too. We had Patty Dermay, who is just an ordinary civilian. She's chosen to live in a barrio in Los Angeles, and she really, really, really works to get the recruiters out of the barrio because she understands that these young Latino kids are very ripe for the picking. They don't have a whole lot of hope. They live as immigrants. They don't really understand the culture very well, and they really want to do well, and they really want to fit in. And so the recruiters come in with these promises of $1,000 or $2,000, and these kids go for it. So Patty DeMay works very hard to educate the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We had Rosanna Cabron, and the thing that was so touching about Rosanna was she stood up at the mic and she paused a moment and she said, "This is very difficult for me because today my son is on his way back for his second tour of duty in Iraq."
Mm.
And then she started crying.
Wow.
And she talked about his first tour of duty. She talked about her concerns when he first went in. She talked about how he doesn't want to go back. She talked about how he feels, again, the responsibility to his buddies. We also had two Palestinian women, one a young poet, very, very extraordinary poetry, a soldier's letter to his mother, an Israeli soldier's letter to his mother was one of the poems. And I'm actually going to play some of these next week when I get back because they're very powerful. And then what a wonderful surprise, another woman, Sonalia, an older woman from Beer Zeit in Palestine. I was talking with her, and she told me she was from Berzeit, which is a university town in the West Bank. And she said that, I said to her, "Oh, well, you're going to love the story. I have a story from someone called Violette, was shared with me in Beirut." And I said, she was from Berzeit. Her father was the mayor there during the English occupation. And she said, "Violette Nasser?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "That's my cousin."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so we had a very wonderful conversation about things, and she talked about how her mother, before she died at age 90, had 5 different passports. Because she was Palestinian, she was kind of shuttled, here and there to try and find a home. As a Palestinian, she was persona non grata, you know.
Mm.
And we also had Cole Miller, who is the founder of a group called No More Victims. And one of the things that they do is bring very badly injured Iraqi children to the United States for different kinds of reconstructive surgery. So it was a very powerful event in Los Angeles. And
mm-hmm.
I must say, for me to have been part of the creating of that was, you know, that was exactly what I envisioned for my book when I was putting together the publicity tour.
Mm-hmm.
So... was very gratifying to have that.
Susan Gallimore is who you're hearing on the phone right now. Normally heard on a show here where she's the host, but today I'm interviewing her. The interviewer gets interviewed, if you will. Susan, I got a question for you, and you have a unique perspective on this, and I've wondered about this too. For all the parents with the sons and daughters in Iraq, and it's a lot of daughters too. How did your son's involvement with the war affect you?
Well, I became a military mom, and I didn't really know what that was. And so, while as I mentioned earlier, while he was in Afghanistan, it was very difficult because it was hard to be able to talk with people and, you know, just ask some basic questions like, why are we bombing Afghanistan? The trend then was, again, we're all patriots here, we support the troops, and Afghanistan, the attack on Afghanistan is a righteous attack and a righteous war. So I've continued to work with the military families, and in the event in Boston, actually, we had Joyce and Kevin Lucy, whose son Jeffrey Lucy came back and killed himself. He would have died now 5 years on the 22nd of June. And also we had Carlos and Melita Arredondo. Carlos was the father who set himself alight by mistake when he was trying to get rid of the Marines who brought the news that his son Alex had been killed.
You're saying the guy lit himself on fire by accident?
Yeah, what happened was the Marines came to the house to tell him that his son Alex, I think he was 18, had been killed.
Yeah.
And Carlos, from Costa Rica, and he described himself as very passionate. You can't, you know, expect him not to do something to go into grief about his kid.
Yeah.
He said he tried to get rid of the Marines. You know, get out of here, get out of here. And in his trying, he mangled somehow with a gas can, and the SUV that the troops, that the Marines came in was set alight, and he was caught in that, and he was burned.
Did he die? No?
No. There's a new kind of treatment for burns. It's some kind of silver bandage thing. I'm not exactly sure what it was. But you don't really see. He had third-degree burns on a large percent of his body, but you don't really see that because of this new technology. But what he started doing was driving around the country in a flag-draped coffin.
Oh, I remember. He was on Democracy Now! Quite a few years back. I remember.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, so they were at the Boston event, and it was a little bit uncomfortable in some ways for me, because here I was, you know, I'd been all over the Middle East now, and I had stories of just the kinds of stories that you never imagine that you will hear. One woman in a little town in South Lebanon, her name was Mariam. She was in this town called Kana, and Kana is a town that often gets struck when there's a bombardment against Lebanon by the Israeli Defense Force. And Kana was struck again, and the people of Kana were hiding in their basements. And Mariam, with her family members, was in a basement, and they'd been in the basement. There were like 50 or 60 people, and in a relatively small basement. And they'd been there for 17 days. 17 days, and it was midnight on the 17th day, and they put all the children in one corner where they felt was the most safe corner, and they were sleeping on the floor. Of course, no lights, because at night, even if the flicker of a candle they were afraid would indicate where people were, and they'd be bombed.
Wow.
And a missile came into the basement and went right into that corner where the kids were.
Oh, no.
And then another missile followed that, and there was complete pandemonium in that basement, because the exit, the entrance to the basement, had been blocked with these blasts, and the only way they could get out was through the holes left by the missiles. And so they were trying to shout, you know, out their children's names and their loved ones' names, and it was complete pandemonium. So they got out of the basement, and Mariam got out of the basement, but turned out that her husband of 40 years had been killed, and 10 members of her family had been killed, and the youngest was like 10 months old.
Oh, no.
The memorial is right there on top of the basement now, in this, in the outskirts of Kana. And so, you know, this woman had lost 10 members of her family. And so, you know, it's very difficult.
She spoke to you.
Yeah. She spoke to me. Well, I had a translator. So, you know, the difficulty becomes, here we are mourning the children that have died in from the United States. You know? And I come up with these stories of unimaginable tragedy. And it feels uncomfortable to do that, you know, to say, well, Mariam lost 10 members. It's almost like you know, it feels a little bit like I'm saying, well, you know, what about this? How do you have the right to, you know, mourn one when she has 10? And so it's very difficult. I mean, it feels very uncomfortable, but I believe this needs to be said. You know, we need to share that Mariam, this peasant woman, lost 10 members of her family, and I have pictures of them on my website, motherspeak.org. And the story is there, and I have pictures of the family that's remained. You know, the young women have lost, one woman lost her daughter. She was holding this child overnight in the dark, and the child was already dead. She held the child all night. So it's a terrible, terrible tragedy, and the women and the children are taking the brunt of it again.
And thus the name, and thus part of the name of the book, the Mother Speak part.
Right, yeah.
You getting that information out.
Right. The long time passing part, of course, comes from Pete Seeger's song, Where Have All the Flowers Gone?
Oh.
So, and we just saw Pete Seeger, who's just a wonderful, wonderful national treasure.
Were you at his birthday party?
I wasn't, no.
Oh.
But it was the 3rd of May, and
Yeah, he just turned 90 years old. What a prolific cat, too. I didn't know that much about him, and he's, man, he did a lot of stuff in his life.
And he's still doing a lot of stuff.
He sure is.
Yeah.
He sure is.
Yeah. There are so many wonderful people. I mean, that's the thing that I really is driven home on a tour like this. You know, there are so many people who have gotten over the hump of, oh, well, what can I do? How can I do it? You know, and they've just made a way to do it. And they're living very healthy, fulfilled lives. They're serving their fellow humans, you know, and there's no greater calling, I believe, than to serve, you know, to work with people and to work for a clean environment and, you know, clean way of living and a clean way of seeing the world. That's the joy of it.
Yeah, going across the country like that, and you went across the country while you were writing the book several times, too. You went down to Camp Casey in Texas. You went to D.C.
I went to North Carolina.
Okay. Have you noticed a change in the country and the mindset of the people, just the regular people you met
from
back then to now?
Very much. But again, you know, it comes back to this thing, the peace, quote-unquote, people now, we're still not ready back in the days of Afghanistan to look at Afghanistan. And so now they're trying to get up and running, you know, what does it mean? What is Afghanistan? And you can't get the picture of Afghanistan overnight. It's a very complex picture. It's a very complex country. These are not Arab people, for example. It's not the same as an Arab culture. It's very complex, and, you know, in the United States, we don't have the tools easily available to us to understand complexities of culture, because we're a monoculture here. We have subcultures, but the mainstream culture is very much about, you know, this is what you need to do if you want to be part of America. So we don't really have the tools to understand cultures like Afghanistan, and it's something that we absolutely essential to our understanding of war and foreign policy.
Are people a little farther down the road on that issue now than they were back when you first started your project?
Well, it's interesting. I'm hearing more people talk about culture. I talked at length yesterday with a Marine captain. His name is Tyler Boudreau. He resigned his commission after Iraq, and he wrote a book called Packing Inferno, The Unmaking of a Marine. He's a regular guy, world-class guy from Boston, and he has really questioned, you know, the mentality that he went into the military with. He was in for 13 years,
wow.
And he speaks very eloquently about what got him in there and what got him out of there. And so there is a change, and he's talking very much about culture, you know, the cultural underpinnings, the world view that we hold, that we're the best, we're the finest, and therefore whatever we do is, you know, fine and dandy. And so he's really challenging people to speak about that, and he's challenging them from the position of having been an enlisted Marine and then a Marine captain. And these are the people we need to hear from.
Have you seen more of them coming out on your book tour just to check out what it's about?
Yeah. I mean, people, it's very hard to change your mind, Bird. It's very hard to, you know, acknowledge that, gee, maybe what we're doing is not so cool after all. Maybe it really is just feeding the, you know, the military defense contractors and so forth. And, you know, it's very hard for people to begin to challenge the way of thinking that they've had for sometimes 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essential, and I believe that it's essential to the democracy that we are losing every day. We lose it when we refuse to talk about these things to one another. We refuse to argue with one another about the righteousness or the lack of righteousness in our foreign policy.
Is the fact that the military is a volunteer army, is that a stumbling block to getting people to wake up to it? Because a lot of times you hear the argument, well, hey, they volunteered. Well, they knew they were signing up for. Come on, now. They wanted to go.
Another person who's very eloquent about that is Dr. Andrew Bacevich. He said we've kind of abdicated our responsibility toward the military by saying, yeah, sure, they're volunteers. They know what they were getting into. And I have to say, I challenge anybody to say that, because no 17 or 18-year-old knows what he or she is getting into. We have a culture here that believes that war is about heroics and heroism and saving the national security and all of that. And that's what our young people go into, with the mindset of. And once they get there, some of them realize that they have doubts about that. And so, they are the ones that are going in as volunteers based on some cultural assumptions that they discover are not true. And then they're the ones that have to try and change minds. And I see some change, a little bit of change, and the change that needs to happen is still very profound.
You're hearing from Susan Gallimore, the regular host of this hour, Raising Sand. And she's just finishing up her book. Are you done with the book tour now, or are there going to be more stops?
I'm done with the first portion of the book tour. I've been invited to do speaking engagements in other places. So from now on out, it'll probably be smaller or more individual. I'll be at the Levantine Museum in Los Angeles at the end of this week, participating in one of the artists is doing it's a kind of installation, and he's encouraging people to talk, people that have been involved in the topic of war at different levels. So I'm going to do that. And so there'll be a few other things like that. Always open to more, of course. So.
And any Bay Area events coming up? Any more?
Well, first I'm going to get home, settle in, go down to Los Angeles. I'll participate in Santa Monica again. I did something with Arlington West when I was there last week. Participate in that again. And then I'll be back to the Bay Area. And there's a couple of other bookstores and so forth. I will be putting more information out about that.
And say the name of the book one more time now. Long Time Passing?
Long Time Passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror. And the website is Mothers Speak About War and Terror, no spaces, just like as one word, Mothers Speak About War and Terror.org. And listeners can go there and, see the different reviews. We have an interesting thing happening, actually. One of the writers, his name is Ron Jacobs, he writes on an online magazine called Counterpunch.
Mm-hmm.
He did an excellent review of the book, and he ended it with saying, when you reader have finished reading this book, he says, first of all, you need to read this book, and then he says, when you have finished with it, send it to Michelle Obama and tell her she needs to read it. And so we're going to actually start a little campaign of get this book to Michelle Obama and, try and get Michelle Obama to actually get more involved. For Mother's Day, she stood up and said, hi, troops, we love you all, and happy Mother's Day, everyone, and thank you very much. That's not good enough. We need more depth about what's going on in these wars. And Michelle Obama has dedicated herself to doing that, and yesterday's Mother's Day greeting didn't really scratch the surface of it. So,
how about you send one to Hillary and all the other big women in the Senate and the Congress, huh? Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah, that would
all
be great.
Of them. They have Barbara Boxer?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that our leadership is really so complicit in the wars and in the torture, and all of these things are now beginning to come to light. They knew this was going on. They knew the torture was going on. And, they turned a blind eye to it. They were not able, for whatever reason, and I think we'll find out more of those reasons, they were not able to stand up against it. And is this what we needed from our leadership?
You lived in America for a long time. You've been here over 30 years, right?
Right, just on 30 years.
Originally from South Africa, and you lived in Israel on a kibbutz just before you came here.
Right.
And so you've seen some of the world, and you're not from here either. So I think you bring a unique perspective to this question. In the last
let's just say, 8 years since Bush got in, if not even before then, too. Did America get off track?
Well, I think we need to ask ourselves what a democracy is. One woman, Elam, in a very small village in South Lebanon, south of the famous historical city called Tyre, or Tyre as they pronounce it, she said to me, what is democracy? You know, she said, doesn't democracy come from inside a country and is not imposed from without? If it's imposed from without, isn't it occupation? And these are the kinds of questions that we need to be grappling with in the United States. I think we're losing our democracy. I think we now have a sort of corporationocracy, or corpocracy, if you like. And we need to go back to the democratic roots that that the country, you know, has been proposing that we live by. And it's not just throwing in your vote every 4 years. It's actually engaging with people and challenging people to think in a different way and challenging people to get engaged in civic stuff.
Remember what Ben Franklin said, you know, the United States, the people of the United States will always have the government they deserve.
Right.
If they don't participate, somebody else is going to take it over and participate for them.
And I think we saw that in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still not, we're now we think, well, Obama's in and everything's going to be hunky-dory. Well, the underpinnings of the government now are in question. I think we need to be looking very closely. Who has the power in this country? It's certainly not the people. If it was the people, these wars would not be continuing. It's almost 10 years now.
And then that leads one to the question, do the people really care?
Yeah.
Or do they care enough to stand up and say anything? And I'm afraid to ask that question because I might not want to know the answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you care about? Is it shopping, or is it, you know, living a life of integrity and depth and real understanding?
Well, American culture is, yeah, it's a lot of TV-based shopping and partying and who's wearing what and who's doing what. And
exactly.
It's a media culture, you know? Celebrity culture.
When we critique what we're watching on TV, we should be asking ourselves, what is the actual message here? And I think a lot of times we have a militaristic message going on, you know, the violence, the good guy, bad guy stuff. And we're not really asking ourselves that. And we're putting our kids in front of those shows. And it makes me laugh when I hear, you know, progressive people say, well, we don't question that because that is a freedom of speech issue. And I'm like, what about the freedom of speech to critique that? You know, why don't we critique the movies more fully, the kinds of games that our kids are playing, you know, the video games? Why aren't we critiquing that? You know, and that seems to be out of balance because of the sacredness of the freedom of speech. And I think we really need to, you know, consider what that means.
Speak a little bit, because you know about this. And speaking of that, getting kids to do something, speak of these 18, 19-year-old kids who were really good at computer games got recruited to fly these drones over in Afghanistan,
right.
And they're doing it from a base in Nevada and I think up by Sacramento, too.
Yeah.
Speak about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the video culture, you know, allows a certain amount of unconsciousness. And you get, I mean, a 17 and 18-year-old, you pay them a lot of money, and you have them sit in front of these consoles, which is something they've been doing since they were 6 and 7 years old.
Yeah, they're very good at it.
Right, they're very good at it. And they don't, you know, an 18-year-old doesn't have the maturity. This is why they recruit young people of that age, because at that age you're going through a solidification of your personality, but it's not solidified yet. You don't have a solid core. And you're trying to figure out what the world is about. And so you get recruited at that age and stuck in front of this thing with lots of money. And you don't have a college education, but you're getting paid as if you do. And you're, you know, shooting people in, well, now it's Pakistan.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't believe that the human being is at the level right now where they don't eventually recognize what they've done. You know, it may take them a few years. But they get it, and they're the ones, as I said to my son, you're the one that's going to have to put up with that. The United States military is going to go on just the way it has been doing fine without you. You know, know. Mm-hmm. Doesn't need your heart and soul anymore if it's damaged, you know.
Yeah.
So we need to take care of our kids. We need to understand what they're doing, and we need to take care of them. And to do anything less than that is to betray our jobs as parents and to betray them as human beings.
Susan Gallimore, the guest today and not the host, a long time passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror is her new book. Who's the publisher on that?
The publisher is a British publisher called Pluto Press.
Pluto Press.
And Pluto Press. Pluto actually does a lot of really good analysis and writing. And they're not afraid to take on some of the more hot topics.
Mm-hmm.
And they've often considered to be quite controversial, which is unfortunate because they have a lot of excellent writers. And the American distributor is Kelgrave Macmillan. So
okay.
It's a long time passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror, Pluto Press / Kelgrave Macmillan. And again, listeners can find out more on the website, which is motherspeakaboutwarandterror.org. Or they can join in. We're going to be doing workshops and so forth, and people can get involved with that through the Mother Speak website. So that's just one S, motherspeak.org. And learn more about, you know, the continuing work that we're going to be doing around trying to, you know, create a better world and have people step up with their greatest creativity for peace.
When I first met you a little over 2 years ago, you were a mother of a GI in Iraq. You had gone and come back. You were doing a little day job, and you were planning the book. But you weren't an author yet, and it was yet to be seen if that would happen. And now it's happened. You are an author. You have a different place in this life and society now than you did when I met you 2.5 years ago. How does it feel?
It feels like just another step on the road to, you know, to creating a world that needs to be created, you know, being part of a world that has already been created, a world for peace and a world for understanding, and a world for multilateralism. So it's just another step along the way, and to try and talk with people in a way that's respectful and not not defensive and not aggressive, but, you know, to listen to the place that people are coming from. Because I really believe that people at heart are good. I mean, there's a small percentage of people. I mean, the same as in the military. They say 1% of the people in the military are sociopaths and are there because they want to kill. But 99% are there because they want to, you know, do something dignified for their country. And I believe that most people are that way. They want to live with integrity, and they want to live with safety, and they want to live with dignity. And, you know, I believe if they knew more about what was going on in other countries, the effects of war, they would want the same thing for those people. So that's my job, is to, you know, try and talk with people with respect and allow them their dignity and, you know, not shout them down and not fight with them. People have their own trajectory of understanding, and I respect that.
That could be the kind of work you could retire on, meaning that it'll never be over and never be done.
Well, it may also not be something that will support me.
Well, that's why that's why you wrote the book. That's not why you wrote the book. But if the book sells, you will get paid, right?
Of course, but I want to say right now that you don't write a book for the money or the glory,
because
there ain't none.
Exactly.
There's no glory or money in writing a book.
No, and
especially the book of the ilk that I have chosen to.
Sure, no, what you hope is that you're trying to convey this message, and you hope your message gets out, and the book is one of the best ways to do it.
Well, also, I mean, I had a responsibility. I went over to these countries, I learned these women's stories, and my responsibility is, as I told them,
to pass it on.
I'm going to share these stories as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm going to do it in a way that's dignified and respectful of the stories that you told me. So, that's where we're at.
Susan Gallimore, finishing up this first leg of her book tour, coming back to the Bay Area. And then you'll just continuing airing more Raising Sand shows as the weeks go on, getting that other message out. Well, getting that message out, right?
Right. Yeah. I have so many interesting things to share with our listeners over the next few weeks from this tour. The kinds of things that people are doing, the kinds of people that are out there doing things, and it's going to be a lot of fun the next few weeks just to kind of lift the lid off some of what's going on around the country. It's very, very inspiring. So.
Very cool. Well, you got a plane to catch, right?
Yep.
You better go check on it.
Better.
And,
thank you so much. Yeah.
Sure. No, thank you for your time, man. I really appreciate you spending time with us today. And no, it's been great. And thanks for all your hard work. And the book, one time again, Long Time Passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror, Susan Gallimore, the author, and also host of Raising Stand Radio, out on Pluto Press. And look for it if you feel you need to get a copy of it.
Right. Thanks, Bird.
Thank you. Well, this has been another edition of Raising Stand. Today interviewed the host of this show,